people are here to listen to me prattle on by myself about movies that are essentially just facsimiles of Star Wars. Somebody was like, hey, you guys like Star Wars? You want to just like make Star Wars but cheaper?
Get a load of this.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have this script here. It's called The Ice Pirates. It's going to make Star Wars look like, I don't know, shitty Star Wars. Oh, my God. Ladies and gentlemen, on this episode of the Culture Cast, I am still your host, Chris Dashew, and I am joined by my good friend, the one and only, I don't know, man about town, beer label maker.
Hey-o.
Artist. Artist. That's what I would call you. Artist. That's why you're here.
Yeah. And my kids, you know, like my drawings.
My kids like my drawings. Dustin. Oh, my God. Well, you know what else? You know what your kids might not like? The Ice Pirates. You know why? Because it's not an animated Disney movie. But I would contend this is a kids movie.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I watched it when I was like 9 or 10.
I'm not sure that I'm not sure the movies I watched when I was 9 or 10 are technically kids movies either. I did see Predator when I was like 7. So, that's well-known awesome. Kids movie, Predator.
Yeah, lovable characters.
Yeah. But no, on this episode of the Culture Cast, we're going to be talking about 1984's The Ice Pirates.
At last, the space comedy you didn't know you were waiting to see. The Ice Pirates. In the far distant future, in a galaxy where those in the know don't go, real estate is cheap, and they've got great sushi. But there's no water.
You got any water?
It is a time when desperate men will swing from the chandeliers.
Pirates, sound the alarm!
Just to get a drink.
Just take a look at that.
Good men like Jason, space pirate. Oh! And explorer of the cosmos. His chief engineer and fellow rogue, Roscoe.
Oh, you quit that.
And the beautiful Princess Karina. One tiny band who must bust their buns, battling the masters of all the water in the galaxy. The evil Mithradoids, famous for not being nice.
Killing you would be too easy. I have something better in mind.
The Ice Pirates.
Let's party!
See startling special effects. See depravity in zero gravity. See glamour girls from another galaxy. See kung fu robots. And delight in the mysteries of the seventh world. The one place in the universe to get a decent glass of water.
Don't do that.
Insist.
How's it going? It's going great. How's it going with you?
The Ice Pirates. A totally spaced adventure.
So the film is directed by Stuart Raffel, written by Stuart Raffel and Stanford Sherman. Stanford Sherman is one of the writers of Krull.
Yeah.
Movie I've never seen. I would like to see, but I've never seen. Maybe this movie might inform my thoughts on Krull even. Who knows if they're, are they tonally similar? Is this similar to Krull tonally?
No.
Is Krull like a serious movie?
It's its own beast.
It's sure is, I'm sure. And yeah, so Ice Pirates is a movie that stars Robert Urich, Mary Crosby, and Michael D. Roberts as titular ice pirates who, in the future, where water is scarce, they have to find water and or ice, which they turn into water because ice is, shockingly, frozen water.
Mm-hmm.
And so these ice pirates are tasked with stealing water. And then, of course, they get themselves into a little bit of trouble when they have to rescue a princess who then unrescues herself from them. It's the only way I could put it. And they go on an adventure to find a secret planet, a planet
the seventh world.
The seventh world that may or may not solve all of their ice problems slash water problems, I guess. Less ice, more water. But ICE is the vehicle through which they're stealing things. So Dustin, you and I have tried to record this episode three or four times now. Two times. This is the third time, I think. You know, so I've seen the ICE Pirates like three times now. Why did you want to talk about the ICE Pirates? And secondary question, rewatching it to talk about it, what'd you think?
So as with most of the things we talk about on this podcast, there's a element of nostalgia to these movies. This one is totally, my dad couldn't wait to show me this movie. So in 1984, I would have been 2 years old. So he had this one in the barrel for like another 6 or 7 years before he showed it to me
right
on VHS. And I loved it. I mean, at that age, it's space, it's funny, and that's why I loved it. Watching it again as an adult, there's obviously humor that you understand as an adult that you really kind of right over your head as a kid, but it's still like, yeah, cheap knockoff raunchy Star Wars.
It is, you know, there's a lot of things in this movie that are like lifted directly from Star Wars, almost the entire premise, like the crew, Robert Urich's of the way he carries himself is very Han Solo-esque. There's an actual African-American character in this movie who's not marginalized to the sidelines, which I thought was kind of interesting to have a main character in a sci-fi movie be African-American, which might not seem like a lot, but African-American representation in science fiction is not great. It's better now, but you know, yeah. One of the jokes that everybody always made about Star Wars was there's one African-American actor, Billy Dee Williams, who's not given much to do, given more to do in the third one. I would still say Billy Dee Williams criminally underutilized in Star Wars, given who he is as an actor. Yeah. But that being said, this movie's a lot of fun. I didn't mind watching this movie three times. Maybe the third time the jokes didn't land as much, but the third time I was focusing on different things. You know, the second time I was focusing more on the jokes. The first time I was just absorbing the experience of this butt-fuckingly insane movie. It is insane.
And it is insane.
What makes it insane is it's one of those sci-fi movies that existed in the 80s where they just threw shit at the wall. And just, I mean, there's a frog woman for whatever reason. There's time travel for whatever reason. There's weird robot Bruce Valanche for whatever reason. There's John Carradine for whatever reason. There's Ron Perlman as the ship's chef for whatever reason. And you know what? It wouldn't work. It shouldn't work for the most part. It couldn't work in most movies. But in this movie, it's like it's this kind of ragtag crew of weirdos on a sci-fi ship going through the galaxy fucking around, and you know, it's kind of endearing.
I thought it kind of had a Guardians of the Galaxy-esque vibe to it.
Yes, I would agree. Like a rat, it's that old thing of a ragtag group of people put together against their own devices who, because of the situation, have to work together. It's, you know what this movie reminded me of a lot, which also is a ripoff of Star Wars, it's a direct parody. This reminded me of the halfway point between Spaceballs and Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because it is a tongue-in-cheek parody. It is a satire of Star Wars almost directly. I don't know what else they're parodying, really. Sci-fi writ large.
It's a post-Star Wars world when this is made. And they can't go out and make Star Wars a Star Wars movie. So they have to do something that's different. I mean, yeah, it's totally lifting things out of Star Wars and poking fun at it and having fun with it and doing it in a little different way where the humor is obviously more adult.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it's more adult humor, but it's not Mel Brooks Spaceballs humor. Like I was saying, kind of that happy medium.
It doesn't go over the line. Yeah.
Right. And again, I wouldn't even go as far as to say like Spaceballs goes over the line, but I think Spaceballs toes the line. I don't think this movie ever really toes the line. Maybe it has a couple, you know, kind of bawdy jokes from time to time, but I don't like, you know, where they're getting lobotomized and they're getting their dicks cut off and stuff in this kind of weirdo factory. But this movie never goes the direction of Spaceballs, where you have President Scroob and, you know, he's fucking his secretary. And there's a lot of sexual innuendos in that movie. There are some here, but for the most part, this is really it feels like an MGM movie. On top of everything else, like this feels like an MGM movie, right?
A father would feel fine letting their 9 or 10 year old watch it.
Right. Exactly. And look, I saw Spaceballs when I was 9 or 10. And I think maybe the benefit to that is the jokes in those movies tend to go over your head as a kid. So there is that. I mean, all these parents, these really kind of helicopter, really, I'm not going to say conservative, but really uptight parents who are like, don't curse. Don't curse in front of the kids, or don't let your kids see these movies. It's like, you do understand that there is a context to a lot of this, and a context informs what you're talking about. And cursing, I hate this idea of like using bad language. I hate that term, even bad language, somehow makes you lesser or is a sign of your inability to form rational thought. To me, it's just self-censorship and people who are being a bunch of big babies. And this movie, it's kind of my kind of point is this movie, it kind of pushes those right buttons to show that it's not afraid to make the jokes that would make not a parent uncomfortable, but only a parent would get, only an adult would get. It's not afraid to make those jokes. And as someone who, you know, grew up in a household where it was like, you can't watch rated R movies until you're 18. Okay. Nobody ever listened to that, myself included, but a lot of the jokes that go over your head, if you're never going to have the context until you're an adult anyways. Yep. Like you can make all kinds of jokes in a movie that a kid will never get until they're older. And that's fine.
For instance, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more here in a little bit, but I can remember the scene about the space herpes being talked about as a kid. Didn't know what the heck.
Herpes is, right?
I just knew there was this funny looking bug on screen that was ransacking the ship.
Right. And it's like, you know, there would be plenty of parents now who are like, well, I don't want to show my kids any bad stuff with bad language. It's like, that's fine. But the context is important. Like you said, mm-hmm. if you don't understand what herpes is, that joke is just funny. Like it's just a weird little thing running around the ship. Mm-hmm. And then it, you know, pops out of the turkey that poor Ron Perlman spent all that time on.
Oh,
great. I like that. I like that as kind of a counterpoint to the chestburster in Alien. You have a turkey having, and that's again, like I was saying, like, it's not just Star Wars. There are kind of sci-fi tropes that they're kind of needling that the thing in Alien specifically. I like the idea of, actually, I like the way the universe looks. It reminds me of, this is kind of a weird thing, but I think Angelica Huston also being in this helps. Did you ever go to Disneyland or Disney World and see Captain EO, which was the Michael Jackson?
Yes.
This is what that reminds me of almost entirely.
Yes.
It has that. And look, that's a George Lucas movie. Like, it's a 15-minute George Lucas movie. So it makes sense that this movie, which is aping Star Wars, feels kind of like another George Lucas thing that kind of feels like Star Wars with Michael Jackson.
Now just need Ice Pirates 3D to come out.
Oh my God. As much as I hate Michael Jackson, which I do hate Michael Jackson, I love Captain EO for what it is. It's so much fun. But this reminded me of it because it has that same steampunk cog exposed machinery feel. I don't know how else to articulate it. It's not steampunk, but it's future technology that looks like antiquated technology.
Well, and that's a good segue into kind of the whole beginning of the movie, kind of what you're met with. It's in space. They're in spaceships. It's this future technology. There's been galactic wars going on. And yet the ice pirates are dressed up as like
pirates
of the Caribbean.
Right. There's that dichotomy in this movie, which is, again, something I appreciate. And again, it's kind of a Star Wars-y thing where it's, you have a world that looks lived in, but it's a future world.
Right.
It's not slick, you know, the doors in Star Trek. You see how the doors open in this world. And I think that's like an important thing in Star
Most
Wars.
Most of the time they don't work.
Right. Like in Star Wars, you in Return of the Jedi at Jabba's Palace, you see how that door opens. at his palace. Same like in this movie. The doors in the kind of the world has a weight to it that it's again, as kind of funny and jokey and lighthearted as this movie is, it does a really good world of establishing. It does a really good job of establishing a lived in realistic world that I genuinely believe these characters inhabited.
Well, and then the empire like group in this movie, the Templars.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're straight up dressed as knights.
Right.
Led with chainmail, all that.
Led by John Carradine, of all people, who father to David, Keith, and Robert Carradine of varying levels of success in their own careers. But John Carradine, fantastic Shakespearean, classically trained actor, brings a great level of gravitas to this movie. But you can't help but be like, he's just Alec Guinness, right? Like, it's their Alec Guinness moment where it's like, we need to get a actor of note for this movie. And it's John Carradine, one of the biggest American actors at the time. So, you know, kind of a prestige actor, as it were.
Yeah, they needed that bad guy that just, yeah, had that over the top delivery.
Yeah. Oh, he's great.
Yep. Yep.
That, I mean, that's the thing about this movie. What I really appreciate about this movie is, while it does have the trappings of Star Wars, the story that it is telling has nothing to do with that right. Star Wars story. It is almost, in a lot of ways, cops from a movie, or is kind of another movie that kind of has a similar plot, is Waterworld. It's that same kind of like searching for a mythical land that will solve all of our problems. And mm-hmm. that's the entire push of this movie. And that's why it takes them to all these different places. So it takes it to see one of their friends who was a young man and now he's an old man because he aged looking for the seventh planet, which is where the frog lady comes in, Dustin.
Yep. Who's all about Robert's ponytail and,
oh yeah, she's into him, man. The frog lady in this movie is the thing that I keep coming back to. I don't know. It is, the word bizarre comes to mind. It's strange, to say the least. But again, it's more just feels like this is a world where, I don't know, like they don't hang a lantern on it. You know what I mean? They're not like, oh, look at this weird thing. It's just like, no, like there's just this character in this world who happens to be a frog.
Yep.
And I, you know, I think that's lost in modern sci-fi, just letting the audience appreciate the world and not have to be like, look at that person who's like that, and look at who person like that. Like, remember the original Star Wars, the cantina? Those fucking creatures didn't have names until way later, when everybody was like, who's that? What's his name? And who's that? It's like, I don't need that. I need it without explanation sometimes. I just need this to feel like this is a world where the story's taking place. It just happens to be in a future world.
Yeah, it's just another day in this world.
Yeah. Not, you know, some grand story about readjusting the balance of the world. Like, there's none of that here. I mean, there kind of is, but I don't get the sense that once they've found the seventh world, there's anything they can do about getting back from the seventh world. It's kind of the gist that I got.
Even just character names, like I kind of noticed, you know, Star Wars, you've got Han Solo, Chewbacca, you know, Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader. You know, there are these like kind of fantastical names. Here, the Han Solo character is Jason.
Very a Greek mythology, even.
His partner is Roscoe.
which, to be fair, is the best name of them all.
Oh, yeah. And Roscoe builds a robot named Buford.
I mean, again, what I don't know is the world that this is all taking place in, are they humans? I could never get a set. Cause like, that's the thing, you know,
they never really say,
right. They never really say. So I was just like, the seventh world, did they come from the seventh world and they lost the seventh world and they came from it. And this is like future Earth, like future Earth, like past even, you know what I mean? That's what thought was going on. I'm not sure, but like, I like that this movie ends with, it was just Earth all along. Yeah, it was just world. Earth.
We made it. And they show it and it's Earth.
And you're just like, of course it is. God damn it. Well, they said that the seventh world contained vast reserves of water. Mm-hmm. This movie really just ends like Alien Resurrection ends. And Ron Perlman's in this movie too.
Yeah.
There you go. I mean, where's Sigourney Weaver?
you bring up an interesting concept that I'm sure even the writers didn't even think about. Maybe they did, who knows? And maybe we're unlocking that. But yeah, the whole like almost like an interstellar moment where, you know, maybe they got lost in space and they're back. And is this future Earth? Is this have everybody just left Earth and finally just rediscovering it?
Right. Which is what I don't know. Cause like, that's again, like, yeah. Everybody seems vaguely humanoid. It is the yep. future. So did people leave Earth and then Earth became like a mythical story to these people? And so to find Earth is, you know, they're finding where they came from. Again, I don't think that the movie was getting into those heady themes or heady ideas, but it's just an interesting idea. Cause like the seventh world is so kind of talked about so kind of mythically that, yeah. You're just kind of like, well, what, where were they? Why were they not there any longer? And why are they looking for it now?
Well, maybe they'll figure it out in the long awaited sequel that I hope is made.
Ice Pirates 2 : remember the first one? ? I will say though, for someone who I've never seen in anything else, Robert Urich is great.
Oh yeah. He's good.
He's so charismatic, right? Yeah,
I'm sure other people could have been cast in that movie, but he was the fact that he, and I think I read that this was his first movie role. He did a lot of TV.
This is his first like leading role.
Yeah, leading movie role, which, yeah, that's, I think it's awesome. And it's going to go down in one of those campy Uber fan following movies.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, The thing about this movie for me is, you know, when you sold it to me, you were like, you know, we watched the preview for it and you and I were laughing the entire time because the preview for the movie is fucking hilarious. it's like the preview for the movie, which you've heard now because I play them on every episode. It does a perfect job at setting your expectations as a film goer for this movie. But you really don't get a sense of how good it is until you watch it. But man, Robert Urich as the lead, he really steals the show. He's so charismatic. Mm-hmm. His interplay with Mary Crosby, really good as well. It's a believable romance. I believe that those characters are actually in love. Like, they are believable chemistry between the two. There's a point where they time travel, which I appreciated, that it turns out Robert Urich plays his own future son, which I thought was amazing and hilarious. But at the same time, the thing that I appreciate the most about this movie's casting and the actors is they're not really being asked to be funny. You know what I mean? Like, they're not being asked to crack jokes. It's just the things that are happening in the world is funny. And I appreciate that kind of humor where the world is just absurd. Like, they're stealing ice in the future. Like, have we mentioned that they're stealing ice, the most like commonplace of commonplace things, frankly? Like, I know ice is hard to make because it takes a lot to chill water down to a certain temperature, but they're stealing ice when they have spaceships. Like,
and there's a whole wing of the spaceship that's a freezer,
right? For so the ice. Right. And I love that that's kind of this weird idiosyncrasy of this world is we have this future world with this future tech. They're flying through space. They're, you know, levitating off the ground. Sometimes they're using wheeled vehicles, but ultimately they're trying to steal ice and find water. Mm-hmm. I like that universal kind of theme to the movie.
Well, and to mention more about, you know, they're in spaceships, it's advanced technology. And not only are they dressed as pirates, but, you know, Star Wars, they have lightsabers. Here, it's just swords.
Mm-hmm.
Axes.
Literal medieval weaponry.
A mace.
Yeah, which again...
But they also have laser blasters.
Right, and I like that interplay between the two because it feels so weird and it feels like it's at odds with itself, like stylistically as a movie. But I kind of like that. I like that it feels like this weird world with kind of different people who are into different, like the Templars, like we said, are kind of like literally just knights, like men in armor. And then you have the ice pirates who are just guys in leather, like pirates.
Yep.
And then you have the princess who it kind of, again, it's more futuristic than anything else, that world. But even then, like, you can kind of see the real world showing through the future of the futuristic nature of the world that they're in. So they have this huge conveyor belt where they're turning men into slaves.
Eunuchs.
Yeah. Ballless, mindless servants. The Tromper. I guess. Yeah. But again, like that, I like that kind of, there's this interesting interplay in this movie of like three very distinct styles and tones kind of at odds with one.
Yeah. And you'd think maybe they could just turn him, you know, castrate him with lasers, but no, they have people working a conveyor belt as they move down the conveyor belt. There's people like it's a car factory at different stations doing their thing to like shave his face, shave his balls, cut his hair, get him ready for the ball chomper.
The literal ball chomper that bites your balls off. Literally bites your nuts off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, it's again, this is one of these movies where you would almost say, well, this is a Mystery Science Theater 3000 thing. Like that's who the audience is, right? But those movies in my mind don't know that they're bad or don't know that they're campy. This movie is like steering into it 100. It's not, yep. It's leaning into it so hard it's fallen over.
Like, I think all the actors went into this to have fun with it.
Right. And it comes through on screen. Again, they're not telling jokes. They're not yucking, but you can tell that they're having a good time. They're not overacting, but they're definitely putting on airs. They're having a good time. They're being big with their performances. Again, I think if you think back to original Star Wars, all the actors in that movie are doing the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Putting on even Luke Skywalker is kind of much of a whiny bitch as he is as a character in that first movie. It's a big performance. I mean, people don't like him in that first movie because that performance is so much its own like obnoxious thing. He's terrible in that first movie. Luke is so annoying in that first movie. Second and third movie, not so much. But that first movie, he's bringing a really big presence to the screen because Mark Hamill steals that movie in a lot of ways. But at the same time, like I look at this movie and I go, well, Robert Urich's doing the exact same thing here. The exact same thing. Mm-hmm. He's bringing a level of charisma to this performance that not only does it need, it requires. And if Robert Urich was not as well cast as he is in this lead role, this movie would not work at all.
Yeah.
Because he's so believably charming and you can kind of see that he's got this wry smile on his face, a little bit of kind of a twinkle in his eye. Cause again, everybody who's like you mentioned, everybody who was making this movie was in on the joke. They knew what they were making. There's no way they read the script for this movie and got confused that this was a serious movie. Like there's nobody is being like, this is a serious film. Like this is a fun movie. It's a very fun, purely for entertainment value movie.
Well, and as you know, in Star Wars, they have droids. R2-D2 and C-3PO are kind of the main droid characters. They offer some comic relief in their kind of the way they interact with each other. C-3PO has some good lines. What I like about the droids in this movie is they're just kind of dopey and silly. Yeah. And they don't really talk. A couple of them do. But they're just, especially the ones that's on their ship, like the main character's ship, they're just all kind of shoddily put together. They're just trying to...
They start attacking each other at one point.
Yeah, they're DIYing it the whole way. And when it comes time for a battle, they are literally behind the front line of their droids fighting, pulling back the ones that fall down and putting them back together and swapping parts. Like, that's funny. And they might put them together a little wrong in the heat of the moment. They're not listening right or fighting right. And I think that's hilarious.
Well, and again, I think it just further reinforces the thing that I really like about this movie, which is you don't have to have comedy be through dialogue. You can use the actions and you can use what the characters are doing to be funny. And it doesn't always have to be a character making a fucking one-liner. And this movie, I think, is a testament to that because most of it is situational comedy.
Yep. And the droids made me laugh a lot as a kid and now just because
Killjoy, which I can't help but wonder if that's supposed to be like kind of a dig at C-3PO. I mean, he is kind of a wet blanket as a character, like, you know, oh, my, like you are kind of a killjoy, you know, I mean, he is. I would consider the character of C-3PO kind of a killjoy, which is funny that there's a robot in this movie just called Killjoy.
And Buford.
And Buford.
And Percy.
I think the other thing I appreciate about this movie is, again, it wears its influences on its sleeve and it doesn't pretend to be something it's not. It's not trying to be some elevated movie. It again, when you have a movie with a frog lady who gets blown up by marauders on a planet who are driving around in what look like giant one-wheeled cars. I mean, there's two wheels, but it's these giant, like, almost look like...
It's a Mad Max vehicle from Wish.com. That's what it is.
We have Mad Max at home. But it's great. I mean, again, it's doing what Star Wars did its own way. So you have a chase through the desert and it's really kind of hokey and goofy and there aren't really any stakes, but there are. This movie is a lot of fun. That's really like, if you're looking for something fun to watch, that's not going to really challenge you or ask much of you as an audience member, other than to sit and have a good time. This is one of those movies. You could just throw this on in the background. It's not really going to, I don't think people now would get it as much. I think that's maybe the issue I kind of walk away from this movie is it feels a little quaint at times, which is fine. But I think people today would be like, nah, this is kind of.
If you're not wading in the same movie waters as Chris and I, you may not get it.
Right. And it may not be your thing. I mean, again, if you're not into sci-fi movies, stay away from this movie. It's still a sci-fi movie. Is it funny? Sure. But it is still science fiction. So it still has the trappings of science fiction. It still has Bruce Valanche as a headless robot for whatever reason.
Who's like king of the Amazons at one point or something.
Right.
And they ride unicorns.
Bruce Valanche, who's great, by the way. I think, Bruce Valanche is one of the funniest people on the planet. So, you know, there is that.
The cast is actually, thinking about it through the 2022 lens, they had a stellar cast. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really had a lot of good people on there.
Angelica Huston, Ron Perlman, Bruce Valanche, John Carradine, Ian Abercrombie. I mean, I'm naming great actors and great character actors alike. You know, and then you've got Robert Urich, who, again, great 70s character actor, Mary Crosby. I mean, it's a well-cast, well-made film. I don't know if Stuart Raffel really brings a lot to it it's competently made. I don't think it needs to be more than that, though. You know, it's definitely better than his next film. Do you know what his next film is?
I don't.
Have you ever heard of a little film called Mac and Me?
Oh, yes.
The Paul Rudd joke clip film from Conan O'Brien fame. Yes. Yeah. Yes. That one. That was the fifth or sixth episode we ever did for this show. We're on episode, this is like 503 now.
Oh, my.
So if you want to hear that, you'll have to go and scour the archives all the way back to the early fucking Baba Booey days of this show, where it was a fucking chuckle fuck joke fest, not the serious podcast it is now. But Mac and Me, this movie looks like the fucking Ben-Hur of films compared to Mac and Me. Dude, Mac and Me is an extended McDonald's commercial.
Yeah.
That movie is a pile of shit.
I mean, he's probably feeling pretty confident coming off Ice Pirate success.
Sure. Sure. I mean, again, that's the other thing. This movie wasn't super successful.
It's ahead of its time.
I mean, it's fun. You know, there are, you know, look, there are movies that were just
pimp robot.
Right. There are movies that are just ripoffs of Star Wars. Turkish Star Wars comes to mind. The lead actor for Turkish Star Wars passed away today. But Turkish Star Wars comes to mind. Hardware Wars comes to mind. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Those are more like on the nose, straight up parodies of Star Wars. They have characters whose names are just plays on the characters from Star Wars. So in Hardware Wars, instead of Obi-Wan Kenobi, it's the funnier name, Augie Bendoggie, which is a funnier name. Realist, I mean, right? Augie Bendoggie makes me laugh as an adult. Augie Bendoggie. this movie doesn't go there. It's not a parody. It is that kind of happy medium between Star Wars and Spaceballs, between full-on parody and just a sci-fi movie that's inspiration is Star Wars, where it's, like you said, in Star Wars, it's lightsabers, which are light swords. In this movie, it's just swords. I was kind of disappointed that they had laser guns, frankly. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what's the point? Like, why are these fuckers using swords if they've got laser guns? That's the real question. Like, it goes back to the age-old question of why are people using guns when there are swords, right? Like cavalry versus, you know, musket men versus, you know, armed foot soldiers. Who's going to win?
That's what kind of makes it funny, though.
I agree. Again, it's that difference in levels of technology, even within the future world. Mm-hmm. And I like how they're like, yeah, these guys are super weird, and they're technically just space knights. Capital K knights. Like, they're like that kind of knight. So yeah, no, this was, you know, for all the movies we've watched so far, the two of us, this has definitely been the most fun.
Yeah, it has been. Yeah. The other ones all kind of had a bit of a, like, oh, that was bad.
Or they had like a serious edge to them. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, Arachnophobia is still a movie about spiders killing people. Bubba Hotep has something to say, you know.
Yeah, I love, hate Arachnophobia for love the movie, hate the spiders. I just,
you love that spiders. You love that it's a thrillomedy.
Thrillomedy. This is a space opera.
What
they called it?
I wouldn't call this a space opera because this movie's not serious. So that's the thing. Like, that is the thing about Star Wars that I kind of detest at this point, is Star Wars is so serious. Like, the mainline stuff is so serious, they can't have fun with it anymore. Like, that they're unable to have fun with Star Wars anymore.
Well, and some of the in this one, we talked about the space herpy a little bit. There's a moment in that where, obviously I didn't get this when I was a kid, but I got this now watching it as an adult, where it's this little bug running around the spaceship. They call it a space herpy, and they, Jason and Roscoe decide to like keep it to themselves that it's on the ship. And then when the rest of the crew sees it, I just think the dialogue at that point, it's intentional and it's funny, but they're like, when were you going to tell us that the ship had herpes? That's not something you should keep to yourself.
I like the idea that the ship has herpes as a ship. Yeah. That in and of itself made me laugh when he was like, the ship has herpes. Like, what does that even mean?
And they're like, well, really, it's not that dangerous. Not from what I hear. Like, it's a very intentional dialogue. It's funny.
You know, I looked online to see the kind of contemporary reviews for the film. They're not great. I wouldn't say surprisingly, though. I wasn't surprised to learn that the kind of the response to the movie now is not great. The dudes over at Red Letter Media kind of had a positive take on the movie. I liked this movie a lot. I know that it's kind of a ripoff of Star Wars, but like, it has so much. It's charming.
I think a lot of there's movie reviewers that go into a movie thinking that every movie is supposed to wow them. But then there's movies that are made not to knock your socks off, you know, not to win awards, but just there's this fun, creative idea that somebody had for a movie and they put it together and made it.
And I'm with you. Like I was saying, like, sometimes you just need a movie like this to sit back and watch and go, that was fun. That was just a fun, kind of silly, kind of dinky little movie.
Yep. And with, you know, having kids in the house, going back to when I was a kid, my dad wanted to watch it. Now I have kids and I wanted to watch this for not just a podcast, but like wanted to watch it again. And I can have it on with my kids around and they're not really going to pay attention to it.
Right. And if they do, they might laugh at the funny little silly things going on screen. Yeah,
the droids kicking each other, you know.
Right. Again, like it sits in this happy medium where the comedy is not offensive, but it's not pushing anything. It's not really, this movie doesn't have anything to say, and that's okay.
There's one sexy scene, and even the dirty talk in that is so clean.
Yeah.
I'm going to take my saber out talking about taking his sword off of his belt. And then she's like, oh, it's so stiff. Your belt. As belts are.
Yeah, as they tend to be. No, I appreciate that they had that in there just so we could get the scene where Robert Urich plays himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was awesome. The whole time warp scene is great.
Yeah. So there's a scene towards the end of the movie where the characters are going into this time warp, this time distortion field to find the seventh planet. And while they're in this field, I think this is my favorite part of the entire movie. They're going, as they progress through the scene, they're getting visibly older and older because this distortion field is aging them, as any good distortion field in movies tend to do. So towards the end of the scene, which makes no sense if you think about it, but okay, their son shows up. Their son is played by Robert Urich.
Well, they just had their sexy scene right before the time warp.
But how does their son show up?
Well, what every few minutes is a few months through the time warp.
But where, how does he show up on their ship is my question, Dustin.
She had the baby on the ship.
Did she?
Yeah.
So he just, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I forgot about that. Clearly.
It's a time warp, man.
I do like that. That was fun. That was new. That was novel. That was interesting.
Yep.
I'm surprised a more serious movie hasn't done that, frankly.
Right. And I thought it was a fun take on like a quick little blip into time travel.
Right. Like, I don't need an entire movie about time travel. Just give me the like 10-minute climax. But as they progress to the scene, they're getting older and older. And I like that. Like, I was like, this is fun. It must have been a continuity bitch for the director. And for everybody involved, I mean, it must have been because, you know, you got to make sure in this scene, everybody looks this age as opposed to this age. That sounds like a fucking nightmare, but it's done really well. I didn't really notice anything that really stood out to me, but I like that the scene is this kind of, there's this ticking clock of if it goes too far, we die.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like that the Templars just are like fucked off into wherever. They literally get knocked out into the oblivion, essentially, which I, again, like in a movie like this, you don't have to have characters being shot and blown away. The stakes can just be like, and they get knocked off into a time portal. Fuck it.
And they're gone. We won.
Yeah. There's Earth.
Yep.
Yeah. I know. I appreciated this movie. I am glad we watched this movie. I'm glad we finally got to talk about this movie.
Uh-huh.
I would be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where does this rank for you in parody movies adjacent of Star Wars? Is this your one or is there another one?
I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think if there's not many Star Wars parody movies that take up space in my brain, whereas this one does. It has for decades.
Clearly. And again, I've never forgot
this movie ever.
And I'm glad that there are people like you in the world keeping it going for movies like this. Because, you know, like for a movie like this, it needs to find its audience.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Right. I mean, I don't think people, I don't know. I don't think people were going out of their way to watch this movie, but I'm glad people have found it now. And I'm glad that the people who like this movie, like yourself, I consider myself part of that group of people now, late convert. I'm glad that there are people still holding the torch for this kind of movie because there are movies that I like that I hold the torch for, just like this one. Stuff like Freaked, you know, things that like people aren't sitting and talking about regularly that I think still hold value, especially now with the proliferation of Star Wars, like being what it is, where Star Wars is like the thing now and it's never going away. I think it's important that we like revisit movies like this, that were what Star Wars used to be, taking a crack at the OG 77 Star Wars. Because my God, when that movie came out, there's no way anyone could have predicted that this is what it was going to be at.
Oh, that there'd be this whole universe of it.
Multimedia juggernaut. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, like even as cynical as I am about Star Wars, like I'm glad that something like this exists in the post-Star Wars world.
Somebody watched Star Wars in the 70s and thought, I'm going to screw with that.
It needs more ice.
Yeah, it's more ice.
It just needs more ice. No, this was fun. This was a fun movie. Final word on Ice Pirates, Dustin.
Keep this in your back pocket. This is always something fun to recommend to people to watch. because more than likely they haven't seen it and they're going to watch it and they're going to say, that was fun. That was interesting.
You know, we all know someone in our lives who would love this movie.
Oh yeah.
I happen to be one of those people in your life and you happen to be one of those people in my life, but I know other people who would appreciate this movie and would have a fun time with this movie. And it is it's a fun movie. And that's, I think, in this day and age, we could all use a little kind of fun and suspension belief and just go into a movie and just have a fun time. And at the end of it, you put it back in your mind box and that's it. You don't have to think about it too hard. It's an hour and a half of fun sci-fi send up, a little bit of practical. It's a practical effects extravaganza in a lot of ways, because this is all practically done on a shoestring budget, which I appreciate, obviously. I mean, we didn't even mention that, but I think that's almost assumed. This movie had a $9 million budget. And it looks like a $30 million movie.
I think there was a point where they had like the radar, you know, fighting the ship. And I'm pretty sure it's just Atari's Defender.
Yes, you're correct. You're correct in that. But again, you know, that kind of stuff is fun, where it's like, yeah, and we're just going to hang a lantern. Man,
that's making it work.
Yeah, we're not going to hang a lantern on it. We're just going to show you a shot of them fucking around with the radar, and it's just Defender. Who cares? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to say great graphics. Now you're playing with power. Like, you don't have to hang a lantern on it. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but sometimes there's something to be said for just going with it. So, I enjoyed the shit out of this movie, dude. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for introducing me to this. It was great. I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah. I would definitely, if you're in the mood for something different, sci-fi wise, that's kind of odd, but in a fun way, and you're just looking for a fun time, this is definitely something you should check out. And it's on Tubi, isn't it? I think. Let me make sure. I want to make sure I mention where this is.
Or I've got it on VHS.
Just message Dustin; he'll give it to you. It's not on Tubi. Never mind. But if you should go watch the preview for this movie, get a better sense of what it is. If by the end of the preview you're like, I'm into this, definitely check it out. It's a lot of fun. So on that note, Dustin, I would give you an opportunity to plug where you're at, but you don't use social media because you're a smart, rational adult.
Yep, you know, I'm just here living, surviving, doing my thing.
Which, you know, is a lot, frankly. So, you know, you keep doing you, Dustin, as they would say. As for me, cstachio.com, cstachiw.com. That's my link tree. Go there for all the things that I work on. Dustin and I, like we mentioned, have done a couple episodes together. Dustin brings a definitely different energy to this show, kind of energy that I definitely also appreciate. And Dustin also suggests movies that I've never seen, and I'm never going to say no to talking about something I've never seen before. So you've been picking it so far, so who knows what the next thing is? Maybe it'll be something that neither one of us have seen. But on that note, what was it I said earlier? I had some thing that I said. And we watched it. You should too. So catch us on the next episode.